Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
Let's talk about a populist, anti-government presidential candidate who challenged the political establishment, marshaled the anger of frustrated, disaffected white voters to draw huge crowds to his rallies, which sometimes teetered on the edge of real violence. Now, that might sound like Donald Trump, but it also describes former Alabama Governor George Wallace, who ran as a third-party candidate in 1968 and won 13% of the popular vote. Michael Cohen, a columnist for the Boston Globe, argues that Wallace appealed to disaffected white voters, depended on demagoguery, and led a political movement that was in many ways remarkably similar to Donald Trump's stunning political ascendancy this year. And Michael Cohen joins us from NPR in New York. Welcome to Radio Boston, Michael. Good to have you.
Thanks. Great to be here.
I was really taken by your piece, and you point out that on the surface, these two guys couldn't be more different. Trump, a billionaire businessman, lots of wealthy friends that he likes to brag about. George Wallace described himself as a former truck driver married to a dime store cashier and the son of a dirt farmer. So in what ways are they similar?
Well, I mean, I think the similarity really is about their political appeal and how they sort of rose to the political fore in 1968, now today in 2016. You know, for Wallace, it really was, he was a backlash candidate. He appealed to poor white voters mainly in the South, but also in the North as well, who were frustrated, who were economically anxious, who were worried about larger cultural changes happening in American society. And he used very clear and unambiguous scapegoating. He went after, you know, Washington bureaucrats, and he talked about that the best way to deal with a riot was to punch somebody if they punched you, he said about protesters, if they lie down in front of his limousine as they had with President Johnson, he would run them over. So it was very aggressive, very much like Trump, sort of saying basically what was on his mind, not being politically correct, as the expression goes today.
Mm-hmm.
And I think more than anything else, he really appealed to an alienated group of voters, to people who felt that the government wasn't looking out for them. And this was at a time when crime was on the increase, when you had the Great Society and Lyndon Johnson very much focused on civil rights, focused on minorities, focused on African Americans. And these were white Americans who were generally poor and who felt that they were being left outside and not being taken into account.
Yeah.
And I think this very much explains Trump's appeal today. Among his voting base is poor, non-college educated people who face the sort of bleakest economic prospects, people who feel that the government is not looking out for them. And not just, by the way, Democrats, but also Republicans. And the Republican Party is not looking out for them. So I think in a lot of ways they're both sort of playing into this alienated group of Americans. And in much the same way, in much the same divisive, aggressive, racially tinged, violent kind of manner.
Well, speaking of that violence, and you talked about this in your piece, and I wanted to play some tape, and that is there were some interesting parallels about the way these two candidates respond to opponents, folks who stand up at their rallies and protests, for example. We've heard a lot about Donald Trump talking about wanting to punch someone or saying things like, I love the old days. You know what they used to do to a guy
sure.
like that when they were in a place like this. They'd be carried out in a stretcher. So here's George Wallace responding to protesters at one of his rallies during the 1968 election campaign.
You know what you are? You're a little punk. That's all you are. You haven't got any guts. You've got too much hair on your head, partner. You got a load on your mind. That's right.
So that's George Wallace in 1968. So remind us in what ways a Wallace rally really resembled a Trump rally today.
Very much so, and very purposely so. I mean, his aides used to try to schedule these events in smaller venues. They would make sure the protesters would be allowed in. They viewed the violence that would emerge at these events as something that was positive for the campaign, that would help them, that would rile up voters. And you have to remember also, this was at a time in the late 60s when you had a great deal of cultural change, with people protesting the war in Vietnam. These were very unpopular groups, and unpopular, by the way, across the political spectrum, left and right. And so in a lot of ways, Wallace was trying to appeal to this sort of traditional values, this idea of, you know, people shouldn't grow their hair long and they shouldn't be protesting and they shouldn't be, you know, using four-letter words and things like this. And in fact, he used to say at events that he would teach the protesters a new four-letter word they didn't know, which was S-O-A-P. This was kind of his approach to sort of rile up voters, but also to get media attention. And I think to some extent, this is what Trump is doing as well. I mean, you know, I think a lot of people see these events, Trump events, and they see the violence and they see the protests, and they're sort of stricken with horror. But I think for Trump supporters, they view this in some ways as a positive. They see this as, here's somebody who's coming into the political system, who's riling things up, who is saying things that need to be said. You know, I was in Las Vegas in December at a Trump rally, and I was struck by one man who said to me that he loved Trump because he says all the things I've been yelling at my TV for the last 7 years. And so I think to some extent, you know, he has sort of become a voice for these people who just look around the country and don't like what they see.
You say that Wallace only got as far as he did in 1968 because there weren't nearly enough black, Hispanic, or less angry voters to push back against him. It's different today, right?
It is different today. And I think, you know, Wallace, I think, failed in 68 because I think people eventually came to see him as somebody who was, you know, creating more problems than he was solving. But a lot of, after he left the political scene, after 68, you had Republican politicians who took up his approach, not the same as aggressively as he did, but certainly playing on fear, on white resentment and anxiety and fears about what the costs of integration were going to be on them. You know, larger cultural changes happening. I mean, this became the Republican playbook for 40 years. And in a sense, Trump is using the same playbook. You know, the difference is that in those 40-year period, you know, as you said, there were not enough Hispanic and black voters to push back on it. There are today. And so Trump's strategy, which I think is very successful inside the Republican Party, is not a winning strategy for general election. If anything, I think it's a disaster for general election. I think he can't win because of the fact that the demographic of the country has changed so dramatically that no politician who so repels African-Americans and Hispanics and women can possibly get elected president in this country.
Well, it's interesting because I wanted to – this sort of raises this question, and that is, you know, aren't these two candidates very different in terms of what they've accomplished? I mean, in 1968, Wallace only got 13% of the vote. I take your point about – I think that's conventional wisdom and probably correct that Trump isn't going to be able to do well in a general election. On the other hand, he keeps defying expectations. What we saw during the primary was – you know, we were mistaken. Those of us at the beginning who said he was never going to appeal beyond this small core group of angry white folks, you know, his appeal is much broader than that. At least in these months leading up to the general election. I mean, he's appealing all across the country, to all different age groups, to religious voters of certain descriptions. I mean, it's not just a core group of angry white folks.
Well, I will say this. In the Republican Party, the broadness of his support is rather striking because I mentioned before that he did best among poor, non-college educated voters. He's also doing well among college grads. He's doing well among evangelicals. I mean, mm-hmm. The level of support is very broad. But I really do think that support is restricted to the Republican Party. And if you look at his polling among Democrats, independents, it's basically been unchanged since last summer, and unchanged in being terrible. He's very low favorability marks among Democrats and independents. And, you know, I think one of the things you've seen this election is the Republican Party is kind of an island to itself. It is a much more extreme and radical political party, at least its supporters are much more extreme and radical than the rest of the country. And I do think it's sometimes hard when you see these events and you see so much support for Trump that it sort of feels like this is the country as a whole. But it really is the Republican Party that represents. And by the way, not even the entire Republican Party. I mean, if you look at the numbers among Republicans, you've got about a third of them, even more in some cases, who are saying they'll never vote for Trump. I'm sure some of them will, but surely many of them will not. And if you go to rallies, I was at a Ted Cruz event yesterday in New York, you'll meet voters who will say they like Ted Cruz, they don't like Hillary Clinton. But if you ask them, will they vote for Trump? And they say no. They say, I can't vote for him. I do think that there is a ceiling on his support restricts his ability to win a national election. But within the Republican Party, that ceiling appears to be 40-50%, which might be good enough for him to get the nomination.
Mm. Well, that's Michael Cohen. He's a columnist for the Boston Globe. And you can find a link to his piece about Donald Trump's debt to George Wallace. Michael Cohen, it's great having you. I'm sorry, you can find a link at radioboston.org. Michael Cohen, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Yeah, it was really good to have you. Listeners, stay with us. Coming up, what Massachusetts can learn from Colorado about legal recreational pot. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.